Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and begs producer Guy, please, please come back. We were only too happy for producer Guy to go on holiday, but that can't happen again. That really can't happen again. I'm Kevin Day, and the man chuckling in the background is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. How are you, Kieran?
I'm very good. I'm going to see From the Jam tonight at a church in Brighton. Yeah, that how, and it's an acoustic set. How hipster can that be?
You never fail to surprise me, Kieran. So hang on, this is a Jam tribute act.
But, well, it's Bruce Foxton.
Same thing then, basically.
Yeah.
All right, so it's all right, the one. If you can't get tickets for Paul Weller, you'll go and see Bruce Foxton, but it's acoustic Bruce Foxton.
Yes.
Okay.
In St. Peter's Church in Brighton. So, yeah, I'm very excited.
I bet you are. And I wonder what their policy is on Bruce Foxton jumping up and down, which didn't look cool when he was 23. It's not going to look cool now. he's a very nice chap, Bruce Foxton. All the members of the Jam are. Very nice chaps. Just don't go drink.
Paul,
I wouldn't go drinking with them, but Paul Weller's great. I had two amazing nights with Paul Weller one night. it's Newsday, Kieran, and we have a very interesting mixed bag of stories, and we start with a club that's normally on your good step, Kieran, and that's Chesterfield. Chesterfield are issuing shares to fans, but while admitting that the shares are actually worthless. Is there a method in this madness, Kieran?
Yeah, they're still very much on my good step. Chesterfield have been, in my view, one of the most transparent clubs in recent years in terms of the information they put out. They've recently been acquired by the Supporters Trust. They've written off a load of loans, and I think they were converted into shares. And what the club's now said is, if you want to feel part of Chesterfield going forwards, we're going to issue some shares. You will get a share certificate in return for that. You will get the official Chesterfield seal, which I didn't know Chesterfield had an official seal, but you'll get your official seal on your share certificate. And effectively, we recommend you frame these, stick them up on a wall, because you're not going to get rich from them. And that's the way it should be, because we know that football clubs don't make money. There will be it's a memento of the club, in the same way as you might want to get a program from a favourite match framed or something like that. So the club's been very upfront to say, don't expect to get a financial return on this. It's effectively just a certificate that you're buying. It's not going to cost you very much money, and if you want to, it's a chance to be part of the club.
Oh, I see. So it's that single word worthless there makes it sound a negative story, but in fact it's the opposite of that, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I think they're just saying because of the change in ownership of the club going forwards, there'll be many Chesterfield fans who want to give some form of additional support to the trust, and this is a way of putting money into the club. I mean, Chesterfield's it's a fantastic city to visit as an away fan. I can still remember the battle of Chesterfield from 2001 when they beat us with 1-0. Beat us 1-0 with 6 minutes to go. One of the greatest matches I've ever been to. And afterwards, I think it's fair to say Uncle Terry would have been proud or in fact, Graeme Souness would have been proud, because it then became a man's activity, where a bunch of arseholes decided to knock seven bells out of each other.
You could have straightened the spire. Well, that's a good story to start with, Kieran. It does say comedian on my passport, so I am on a bound to say that I'm slightly worried about the seal. The Chesterfield seal. All sorts of images spring to mind, especially when you said it's going to be on someone's toilet wall in Chesterfield. The lovely Marcia is a regular listener to this show. She's part of the Chesterfield setup, and I'll just have an image of her throwing fish at a seal on the toilet wall, which is going to take it's going to take me most of the day to get rid of. Now, Thomas Tuchel has a large financial penalty impending for his comments about referee Anthony Taylor. This is not a pod, Kieran, where we tend to moralise. You and I, we're not.
No.
We don't judge people, Kieran, because we know that in the heat of the moment, people will say things. But I thought Tuchel's comments about Anthony Taylor being biased towards Chelsea were shameful. They must be challenged. You can't go around saying things like that about Anthony Taylor hating Chelsea when it's quite obvious to everybody that it's Palace. He quite clearly hates Palace. I don't know where Chelsea get this idea from that Anthony Taylor hates them. But I know he was cross, but you simply can't out loud in public on television say that the referee has a bias against your team and shouldn't be allowed to referee them again, can you? So he's going to get a lot of financial pain, I think, isn't he?
Yes. We all feel that referees have got it in for us.
Yeah.
I had a major beef for Mike Dean for many years, but then you realise actually that they give honest decisions. Now, the decisions you might not agree with, but that we are very fortunate in this country to have a refereeing system which is not subject to bias. If you take a look at some certain YouTube clips, you will realise that's not a universal benefit. So in respect of Thomas Tuchel's comments, Chelsea do have quite a lot of history when it comes to managers and fines. I remember Jose Mourinho was fined £10,000 for sarcasm. which can you imagine in your job if you get done for that?
Yeah, fair point.
John Terry was fined £220,000. So I think this is going to be quite a big fine coming Tuchel's way. Presumably he will be charged by the Football Association, because to try to mobilise fans. And now, of course, we've got one of these daft things on change.org. Change.org? Change.org is a German website, which I'd rather not refer to in a family show. But now we've got a petition to have Anthony Taylor not being allowed to referee Chelsea's matches. I think he is refereeing West Ham versus Brighton this Sunday. Referees come under an awful lot of scrutiny. That he will now have additional scrutiny, which isn't going to help him. Referees give what they see. I know as somebody that used to be a referee myself, I'll openly admit I got it wrong. But then, you're pointing out to the centre forward that's calling you all the names under the sun. Yeah, you just missed one from 6 yards. Mm. You got it wrong as well. Yeah, nobody sets out to make mistakes, and a lot of refereeing is to do with judgment on the time at the point in time.
Did you ever tell the players when you were a referee that you were colourblind?
No.
Okay.
Because if I had done, it would have got around very, very quickly, and I think I would have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. I do like the idea of football fans getting petitions. I like the idea that football can be governed by fans' petitions. And who can forget the Brighton one when Brighton fans discovered that the salmon in the sandwiches was farmed That petition went round Sussex like a lightning, didn't it? It's a slightly odd story, possibly disturbing. Israeli fans wanting hospitality packages for the next World Cup may have a bit of a problem.
Yes. You know, the great thing about the World Cup, and I've been fortunate to attend a few World Cups, is that you meet fans not just from the countries which are participating in the tournament, but from all over the world, because it's a fantastic occasion. And I genuinely hope that the Qatar 2022 World Cup is a success, because then the fans will have enjoyed themselves. But if you can't get sort of your regular Joe tickets, and I normally apply via the FIFA website, you can go for hospitality packages, but there is no opportunity to do that via Israel. But there is one, and this is, you can understand why this might be causing some disconcertment. You can get one for the occupied Palestinian territories. Now, I'm not getting involved in Middle East geopolitics, but that appears to be a bit of an inconsistency there. FIFA are saying, well, nobody came forward from Israel offering to be a hospitality package person, but that sounds, that sounds a bit like they're backtracking. It's going to be interesting if you are a fan from Israel. It's the first time you'll be able to go to Qatar without a foreign passport. Clearly there is some geopolitical issues there, but you would have thought that given that FIFA want to maximize revenues, and I don't think ticket sales have necessarily gone as well as everybody would have hoped, that they would have tried to make these packages available locally as easy and as broadly as possible, and that doesn't appear to be the case.
You say FIFA claimed that nobody in Israel came forward to sell these. Does that imply then that they franchise this? It's not just done through the FIFA website, that they actually give it to travel agents or whatever to sell these packages?
Yes. So what happens is that FIFA will normally focus on selling tickets to fans directly. And then in terms of the hospitality packages, they will delegate that to local agents who know the market and therefore probably know how soft or hard the market is in terms of price resistance, because the packages tend to be quite eye-wateringly expensive, which is why we tend to avoid them.
So they've got flexibility with the prices then. So these agents can charge pretty much what they want within parameters?
Yes, because what they will do is that they will offer you a package which will include hotel, perhaps a limousine to the ground. So they'll offer you far more than just a match ticket.
Right. We travel far and wide on this pod, Kieran. Is that Finley coming? Is that Finley coming in or going out?
He's lying down, waiting for the Baroness to return from the gym, because he's not at his wonky chomp yet this morning. So he's got a long face.
Yeah, I remember the time when you lying down waiting for the Baroness to come back from the gym, Kieran, with the same sort of long face. We discussed many subjects on this show, Kieran. I never thought when we started this, A, that it was last, but B, that we'd be in a situation where we were discussing the price of Factor 50 sun green, but it was one of those perfect Twitter storms at the weekend, wasn't it, at Manchester City?
Well, yes, especially having lived in Manchester for 40 years of my life, Factor 50 in Manchester, there's never been a need before. even when I used to play cricket, it was never too much of an issue. But this is, I think it's an own goal, not just by Manchester City last weekend, but we've seen evidence of this at other clubs as well. In a fan contacted Manchester City sort of support group, and they said, look, it's 32 degrees in Manchester this weekend. Am I okay bringing sun cream to the match? And the reply was, oh, no, you can't do that. It might be used as a weapon. I'm going, if you're going to lob something, you're not going to go and spend sort of £7 or £8 on a bottle of Factor 50 and then lob it half empty at some irritating Bournemouth footballer who City would play home to them. Is this beyond common sense? But we also saw it that some clubs were making it impossible. It was a ridiculously hot weekend. We're in the middle of this heat wave. Some clubs were still refusing to allow fans to bring in water to the game with them. They're saying, oh, yeah, we think you should hydrate. And then they're charging you £2.50 for a bottle of water when you get in there. You know, it has to work both ways. You know, some clubs got it right. Fair play to Brentford. I believe they were actually handing out water bottles to fans inside the stadium. But I saw some of the pictures. I think Leeds fans had a hard time. Everton fans had a hard time in terms of accessing catering facilities. And it was ridiculously hot. We knew it was going to be hot. So therefore, you plan in advance. And it doesn't cost a football club a huge amount of money to get in, you know, a couple of thousand, 500 mil water bottles and just hand them out. It happens at gigs. Yeah, if you go to summer festivals, I think some of the football clubs have let themselves down here.
It's not just in the ground, Kieran, is my concern. It's outside in the queues. It's, you know, Selhurst Park was built a long time ago in narrow streets. So no matter what time you get there, you're going to queue to get in. It might only be 5 minutes. It might be 25 minutes. And it's the same at every ground. And you're being asked to queue outside in the steaming heat without water, which you're going to have to then give to stewards. It doesn't make any sense. And it's happened so rarely. And yet again, football clubs miss out on a decent bit of, not even PR, it's just decent behaviour, basically. Now, I once had, shall we say, heated discussion with the naturalist Chris Packham.
I know this story.
Just partly about his claim that we're only ever 10 foot away from a rat in London. That's where it started. It ended a long way later with him storming out of a car. But in current times, Kieran, in the world of football finance, we are only ever 10 foot away from a cryptocurrency story. And yes, we have several today. And the first is that Arsenal's adverts for crypto assets has been deemed irresponsible by the Advertising Standards Authority.
Yes. The reason why the crypto industry and fan tokens and NFTs want to associate themselves with football is that it brings normalization and legitimacy to those industries. And we've said this on more than one occasion. There is nothing inherently wrong with cryptocurrency, blockchain, fan tokens, if you accept them at face value. They are not, however, investments. And it is this this nudge-nudge, wink-wink, well, you can make yourself a fortune approach. You know, we discussed the Barnsley story last Thursday, and Barnsley then decided to stop their relationship with Hex.com. What we also find is that the supporters of these industries are I think it's fair to say, passionate is one way of describing them, you know, tribal and cult-like. And that's cult, I said there, given the abuse that I got, is another way. So the Advertising Standards Authority is there to protect people who watch adverts. And Arsenal have had adverts with regard to the Arsenal coin, dollar AFC. But if you want to buy an Arsenal coin, you can only buy it using something called a chili. And a chili is the cryptocurrency put out by Socios.com. And to be fair, in some of the adverts, there was an acknowledgement that you could potentially lose all of the money you put into this Arsenal coin. But in the adverts that were on Facebook, there were no such warnings. And they're being put out. And then you get the people who are there as cheerleaders to whip up interest, to whip up value. Now, the price of an Arsenal coin, I think, has gone down around about 60% since it was launched. People will say, well, hold on, you know, we're in the middle of a bear market, there's an economic crisis. All the more reason, therefore, for being transparent and honest and open with regards to any product. So the ASA have come down pretty hard in respect of Arsenal. Arsenal did appeal against an initial ruling. Arsenal have come out with a very po-faced comment. They say that that the Arsenal coin, it's a utility token to encourage fan participation, and it's materially different from cryptocurrencies. But you don't say, okay, what exactly is a utility token? Mm. And as soon as I ask, you know, it gives intangible benefits. Well, yeah, the word intangible means invisible. It's something you can't physically touch. So they've not come out of this particularly well, Arsenal. They're still harumphing with regards to the ASA approach, but there are too many of these stories doing the rounds. There are too many failed coins, or in terms of value. If you want to go and buy one of these coins, just to say, well, I now feel closer to Arsenal Football Club as a result of doing so. Well, then there's no difference in that to the Chesterfield story. If it makes you feel warm and fuzzy, but Chesterfield is saying, look, you ain't going to make any money from this. Stick it on the wall every time you go for a plop plops. Then you can look at that. You can look at your certificate on the wall, and you get that warm feeling. With Arsenal and the coins, that's fine, but they're not coming out to the same extent and saying, "Look, this is a piece of fluff. This is not a legitimate investment."
A grown man saying plop plops, Kieran, is just, we might have to stop for a moment there while I compose myself. Can you just remind us, Kieran, what you mean by bear market?
Yeah, a bear market is one which is decreasing in value, and it comes from, you know, it's like a bear with a sore head, and it's where prices fall over a concerted period of time, and then that's what we have as we've had over the course of the last 12 months, the ramifications of rising inflation, the war in Ukraine, all have had negative impacts on global economic activity.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Cesc Fabregas was a wonderful player for Arsenal. Mm. He's now signed for Italian club Como, but also he's become part owner, which is an unusual sort of move, isn't it?
It is. I think they're in Serie B. Cesc Fabregas, one of the Baroness's favourite players, by the way. I've got no idea why, but... That's because I'm not a cynic, you see.
All right, Graham. All right, Graham Souness. Come on.
So he signed a 2-year deal, and he has become a part owner. And this does appear to be sort of a bit of an ongoing trend, because we've got David Beckham with Inter Miami. We've got the class of 92 at Salford City. Jamie Vardy has apparently bought into Rochester, New York. Georgie Hadji, who was one of my favourite players back in the mid-90s, he's effectively set up his own club, which has been very successful. We're both old enough to remember Francis Lee, who turned his toilet roll empire into the acquisition of Manchester City. Dave Whelan, Wigan. You know, so footballers moving into ownership. Cesc Fabregas, very, very smart guy. So how many shares has he bought? We're not sure. It's an unusual thing to take place when a player is still using his boots, as it were. But I think it is something we will see as a growing trend, you know, what do players want to do. Under EFL rules, players are allowed to buy up, I think it's up to 10% of a club that they're playing for, purely as an investment. Although in the Premier League, they're not allowed to own any shares whatsoever. And the other thing I didn't realise about Como was that its chief executive is Dennis Wise.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I read that. What? I didn't know he spoke Italian.
I don't think they would challenge him if he didn't speak Italian. I imagine he just shouts loudly in English and points at things. But I did not know that little Dennis Wise. It would be interesting, Kieran, to see whether it is an inducement for Cesc Fabregas to sign for Como that they offered him shares, or whether it was the other way around, that they offered him shares and he said, well, I'll come if I can play.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be because he will have had to pay for the shares,
right?
So when he joined the club, it could be that it's a nominal number of shares that he bought, though. You know, I know some managers that when they move to a club, they sometimes buy shares, and then when they get sacked 6 months later, they say, well, never really that interested in the first place.
Now, I may have mentioned before that Ali, whose father was a Methodist minister, God rest his soul, which meant they moved around quite a lot, but she spent the second part of her childhood in Kenilworth. So I still know a lot of the people she made friends with at school, and most of the boys are Coventry fans, and indeed are most of the girls. And judging by the messages I was getting yesterday, Coventry fans are slightly worried at the moment, firstly about the whole situation. They may be about to sue their landlord Wasps, the rugby club, in relation to matches postponed at the RICO, the Coventry Building Society, whatever it's called, but more so by the fact that, rather oddly, Simon Jordan, ex-owner of Crystal Palace, said live on Talk Sport Radio yesterday that he was considering buying the club.
Yes. I think it's useful to separate out these two issues. During the Commonwealth Games, the RICO, because it is the RICO, let's not pretend otherwise, the RICO was used for the Rugby Sevens, and by all accounts, it's taken an absolute hammering.
Mm.
Now, Wasps are the landlords. Wasps have financial challenges at present. They missed some loan repayments, which were due. That's not gone down well with the people that have lent them the money. The club is losing money as well. It's had an on-off relationship, I think it's the politest way of describing it, with Coventry City itself. Last Thursday, there was an independent agrimist inspection. Now, I don't know what an agrimist is, but I presume it's something to do with grass. We could perhaps refer it to Manscaped. I'm not sure. as part of our relationship with our very good friends there. The pitch was deemed to be unsuitable. Not of the quality required. Therefore, Coventry went and postponed the game. And now they've had to postpone another match, and I think it could go as far as three. So where does this leave them with the EFL? Now, we know that matches get postponed. I think Forest Green Rovers versus Accrington Stanley, that was a match was abandoned or postponed due to a waterlogged pitch. Yeah, we've had matches postponed due to fog. Other issues arising. I think West Ham, when the World Athletics Championship took place in the London Stadium, their first couple of matches were away from home.
Yeah.
So there is a history, especially at the start of seasons, of matches being arranged in an unusual pattern, and that's just part of football. But this appears to have come as a bit of a surprise to Coventry. They are unhappy. They will have printed programmes. They will have arranged for catering. It could be that they're now going to try to recover some of that money from Wasps as compensation. In terms of the EFL, the EFL rules say that if you do not fulfil a match, then potentially you are in trouble. Where does this leave them? It's because Coventry have an obligation themselves regarding pitch maintenance. And this is the problem with you're a tenant. According to the EFL rules, it's the club's responsibility to make sure that the pitch is in of a high enough quality. If, however, the club itself has a relationship with the landlord, it's hand to hell. So the Coventry could find itself up with a charge, guilty of misconduct. And I think this is one of the things which concerns Cov fans, is that there will be an independent disciplinary commission if charges are made. And by all accounts, the range of sanctions is as wide as it can possibly be. Could be finger wagging, could be go and sort it out with the landlord, could be a fine. Worst case scenario, could be points deduction. And we've said all along that we think that disputes or charges should be financial rather than what happens on the pitch, and which is ironic that this is a pitch issue which could result in a possible point. So I think it highly unlikely myself that the EFL commission would want to do something of this nature, simply because it does appear to be outside of the club's control. They must have been aware that the Rugby Sevens were taking place, but I would assume that they thought there was good faith that if there were pitch issues. It now looks, I think, as if there's going to be a complete relay of the pitch, which according to people I've spoken to, I think that we're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds. Wasps don't have hundreds of thousands of pounds necessarily in their back pocket to pay for this.
Yeah, I think Coventry's other problem as well is that they had several large gigs on the pitch as well, which they don't see the benefit of, because it was Wasps obviously having those gigs. So the pitch is damaged, and therefore Coventry's reputation is damaged, and possibly they could forfeit the games from something that happened from which they have no benefit. But the problem with the ground, Kieran, does this then now become more attractive as a club to buy for somebody like Simon Jordan, God forbid, if it seems that Wasps might be willing to sell the ground as well? Because otherwise all you're doing is buying the name Coventry City, isn't it, as well? And Simon Jordan at Palace, one of the reasons we got into such trouble was because of the whole, Simon Jordan didn't own the freehold of Sellers Park. He bought the lease from Ron Nodes, essentially, or from Goldberg, essentially. It's still Ron Nodes who held it. So it's a slightly complicated situation for anybody buying the club, isn't it?
It is. I mean, Coventry are owned by a hedge fund called Sisu, who I think for a long period of time have been pretty unpopular with Coventry fans, although that relationship appears to have sort of that thawed in recent years. It looks as if Sisu are now of the view that Wasps might need to sell the stadium in order to address their financial concerns. And it would make sense for whoever came in to buy both the stadium and the football club itself. Now, how much that's going to be is open to question. I went into Wasps accounts, and they had the stadium valued last year at 52 million. So you add on an amount for the football club on top, and we are talking a substantial sum of money. So I've seen Simon Jordan's comments. I think that was in response to a tweet or a message which came into TalkSport to say, "Well, go on, Simon, why don't you buy it?" And he sort of said, "Well, I'm not saying I won't buy it," but whether that's him really throwing his hat into the ring is not quite as concrete as that.
All right. Well, he's got other issues. He's got his fight with Lawrence Pacini to sort out first of all, isn't he?
Well, he could have that at the stadium. That could be the sort of the opening night.
That's a great idea.
That would sell out.
That would sell out. I'd buy all the tickets for that. I'd be in Lawrence Pacini's corner, fanning him with a newspaper saying, "Get back in there, Lawrence. Get back in there." The Super League is about to start, Kieran, with FIFA's blessing, but not where we expected it to be.
That's right. And as always with FIFA, there's a lot of politics involved. This is the African Super League, which is due to start next August, I believe. There's going to be 24 clubs. It's got a $100 million prize pot. I think... you know, African football is intriguing, but it's very much dominated by the North African countries. This potentially would give opportunities for clubs from Southern African countries to perhaps be more competitive. Each country in CAF, which is the African Federation, is getting $1 million. So I'm saying, well, there's a lot of money involved in here. Where this money's coming from doesn't seem to be quite as transparent as one would hope. I can't see it necessarily coming from CAF itself, because CAF lost $40 million in its most recent accounts. Gianni Infantino is very much in favour of it, which this is the same Gianni Infantino who was very opposed to the Super League in Europe. Although, I think, to be fair, the proposals here for this Super League are that the clubs would be recruited on merit, would be based on the last 5 years average of of some sort of point system. It's an intriguing one, but there's already some form of Champions League in Africa. There's already, you know, fans are saying, well, what about the impact of domestic leagues, which often struggle themselves to get decent crowds and commercial sponsorship? And reading some of the comments on places like goal.com, and I don't want to fall into stereotyping here, that there is a fear of corruption involved, because African football has had a history of not necessarily being completely transparent itself historically. So if it's a successful competition, that could be great. Opportunities for players to develop, opportunities for clubs to operate on a more of a even keel financially. But where the funding is ultimately coming from for this competition, because it's going to stand or fall on TV ratings like all other competitions, is still open to question.
It's been a busy week for FIFA, Kieran. They took a rather drastic step regarding the FA of India, or the equivalent to the FA of India, haven't they?
Yes, they've been banned from FIFA. So it means they can't play international they cannot participate in international competitions or play international matches. India was due to host the Women's Under 17 World Cup in November. That looks like it could be that opportunity could be lost. And the reason why FIFA have done this, and I will be critical of FIFA when I think there's a criticism, I also give them credit where it's due. And I think here they do deserve some credit. The Indian Supreme Court disbanded the Indian Football Association a few months ago. And in the words of FIFA, we do not tolerate third-party interference. We are the governing body of sport. We don't want politicians getting too involved. And I know this is one of the questions I think we've asked on a previous show with regards to the fan-led review of Tracy Crouch.
See, that spread. See, people are going to start getting suspicious, Kieran, that you're saving the Tracy Crouch references to the last 10 minutes of the show. We're going to look into the betting patterns, Kieran. I'm telling you, I'm serious.
Absolutely. So this is there. These rules from FIFA are there to preserve the independence of individual football associations. We've seen previous bans in Kuwait, in Benin, in Nigeria. So FIFA does actually try to stand up for the football authorities at times, because politicians are sometimes motivated by self-interest and not necessarily in the best interests of clubs themselves.
Do we know why the Indian court disbanded the FA?
I've not got full details. It was, I think it's fair to say, politically motivated. I'll go no further than that.
Right. So FIFA's worry was that the courts in India, I think they appointed a three-man committee to start running football, didn't they? So that's where FIFA's problem is. Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure, Kieran, that our listeners will be delighted to know that you and I talk to each other outside the pod. and this week's subject of conversation has been mainly, when the fucking hell is Guy coming back? But we did joke after Palace's point at Liverpool. We actually joked that's it, title race is done, give it to Man City now. And lo and behold, some of the bookies already agree with us, and one is even talking about paying out to people who put money on Man City, which with 36 games to go is slightly ludicrous.
It is indeed. Yeah, I mean, I think the best odds you can get are 11 to 4 on.
Wow, wow.
Which with 36 matches to go, yeah. You know, Brighton, we're only 2 points behind City and we're 500 to 1.
Mm.
But then that's probably fair odds, actually.
Yeah, I'm not leaving this seat to put money on Brighton winning anything.
<That's right. laughs>
you could be 10 million to 1. I'm still not, you're not even a pound on my money.
We're not a gambling show. We both admit that we do gamble on football now and then, and other sports. But equally, we're not hugely in favour of some of the business practices of the industry. That's why that's our independent stance, and that's why we don't. And people are wondering. That's why we don't take adverts from the gambling industry. And we've not accepted sponsorship. It's just that we quite like the idea of being independent. And I know other institutions who get support from the gambling industry. They sometimes get that phone call. Well, would you rather change some of those words in that report? And yeah, we quite like. But yeah, we're still fanzine. This is a fanzine with words spoken rather than written. So the bookies seem to have given up in terms of the championship. Who's going to win the Premier League this season? Have effectively handed it across to Manchester City, which is, as you rightly say, does seem a bit premature. You know, all clubs can have a poor run of results, and there's some other decent sides in the Premier League as well.
Yeah, we had that conversation very early on, Kieran, in our relationship, didn't we, with Guy, about we would never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, be sponsored by a gambling company. And then the first time one of them tried to sponsor us, and we realised how much money we could have made. Well, maybe we should rethink that. But no, we stuck to our guns, which is why, as you say, it's still a fanzine with words. Our final story, Kieran, is Inter Milan's shirt sponsor have yet to make any payments. The club are thinking about legal action. I wonder if our lovely listeners can have a guess as to what industry Inter Milan's shirt sponsor may be from.
Well, it will come as a huge surprise that this is a blockchain company called Digital Bits. They've got an 85 million euro deal with the Nerazzurri, and that's about as far as my Italian goes, although I'm in a French newspaper stroke online magazine today, which says that I am the derrière de Price de Football podcast.
You're the bottom of the Price of
I'm the bottom, yeah. Yeah.
I don't say things like online stroke magazine. It's definitely about leaving. What in what context? What if you're a derriere? What am I then? I'm not mentioned. That's what I my guess. That's my guess. That's my normally my role in this is to not be mentioned. But why are they suggesting that you speak out of your derriere, Kieran? On this,
that's what I was. And I sort of read the magazine, and you know, I've not done much French since my grade C in 1978 O level, but I was particularly impressed with Le Big Six, I can get about four words in every sentence. It's all about Newcastle, and I think it is indicative of the huge interest in English football from not just from the domestic broadcasters and media, but I've got a German magazine, French. I'm on South African radio this afternoon, and it just shows the fascination that people have with the sport that we love, and why football finance that they're interested in is beyond me. But we wouldn't be here unless they were. Inter have had losses of over 300 million in the past couple of years. They've had to borrow. And now this comes along. There is now a threat that Inter might remove Digital Bits from the front of their shirts. Originally, they were the sleeve sponsor. They've taken over from Sochiots, who have also been mentioned today as part of the Arsenal story that we've had. So it is a much broadening footprint that the world of crypto and fan tokens and NFTs is having on the game today. And as we said before, you've got to treat them as non-investments. And then just you know, if you want to treat them as glorified Panini cards, that's the best way to do it.
Before we go on to say goodbye, Kieran, just pertinent to our previous story, I would like to point out that I do not gamble on football. I have the occasional flutter on horses. I do not gamble I do not gamble on football. I'm certainly, definitely not one of those people, Kieran, who thinks that their team may lose a football match and so they have a bet on that taking place, Kieran. That sort of behaviour, and I'm pointing no fingers, Kieran, because people can't see me pointing the finger. But yeah, well, let's just leave it hanging there, while hopefully the derriere of English football looks slightly. What we need to do is we need to get Dennis Wise, who we've established now is multilingual. We'll get him to translate. We'll lift him up onto the table and help him to read the paper. Thank you to everybody who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod as well, that'd be very kind of you. You can go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. We'll be back on Monday as usual with our questions pod. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, fans, folks, I'm out of terrible trouble with my words today. Thank you very much for the support for the show, which is expressed in many ways. Patreon is one way of doing that. Another way of doing that is to go on to that podcast app of yours and give us a review. You can give us 5 stars. It helps us with algorithms. It helps us in the charts. It helps us in terms of credibility when we're trying to book some guests. And we've not booked any guests for the past few shows simply because that would involve myself and Kevin having a degree of organization and skill, which is beyond us. So producer guy, please come back. We love you. We miss you. If you give us 5 stars, it doesn't actually matter what you say in the narrative. If you're giving a review, you could say you would rather have the show presented by Jerry Sadovitz and H from Steps. And I think that would be a fascinating show myself. And I'd definitely listen in.
Having spent time with both of those people, let's not go there, Kieran. We'll keep it at a 45-minute pod. That's
right.
Yes. Okay. All right. Okay. Bye, everybody.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.